This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Hello, welcome again to the Producers Podcast. I'm Ryan. And today I'm actually joined by a very good friend of mine, someone I had on my list for a good, at least a year. Known him for going on 7 or 8 years now. But Alan Peck is the guest. Alan has simply blown up in the world of voiceover in the last, I mean, he's been very successful for the better part of a decade or more. But in the last year, just been crushing it. So we'll hear all about Alan and everything he is doing here coming up in the interview. It is a two-parter. I realized when I tried to put the Deke interview into one part that while I could make it one part, my server has restrictions and it's not worth trying to recode stuff. So anyway, two parts when they go long, and that's what we get today. I do have some really cool stuff coming up, though, so hopefully you take part in the very next one. So if you're getting this episode when it's released, it'll be, you know, hopefully Wednesday morning-ish that you're hearing it. So this coming Friday, and what is it? Wednesday the 6th, though. Friday the 8th of November, 2013, I'm going to do a live video tech roundtable with Jeff Berlin and Steve Sykes. And this is something I've wanted to try and put some of these special deals, you know, episodes. I mean, this will be turned into a podcast also. But I've wanted to try and put some of these together. Anyway, when I thought about the bulk of the emails I get are, you know, how do you get into the business? And whether it be radio imaging production, radio in general, or voiceover. A lot of the questions I get, though, have very specifically to do with tech-related issues, i.e., hey, man, I don't have a lot of money, but I want a good enough mic, but, you know, do I have to buy a $1,200 this? Or so Jeff Berlin is about as savvy a voiceover talent as I know when it comes to the tech side of things. And Steve Sykes is just an amazing producer. He works a lot more in music, sound design, and music to picture, and then a jingle company. But as far as radio imaging production, he's one of the best and extremely tech savvy. So as far as working pros that know their way around the equipment, these are two of the guys to bring on. I will say, well, to finish this, Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. I'll be in Central, so 10 o'clock my time. I'll post a link. There is a post right on the top of my page on the blog. The info will be updated there. I'll shoot it out on Twitter and Facebook, and I'll put it in a couple of the forums on the Facebook there as well. So hopefully you take part in that. I can take your questions now. You can email me questions, anything you want us to cover. You can also watch it live, or you can just ignore us and then get the podcast later. I'll rip the audio of whatever we do and put it out as a podcast episode. So you can probably hear I just have a total Texas allergy stuffed up head. It's really fun, but I got shot up with 2 shots a couple days ago. So I think I'm either going to turn into a zombie or I'm going to be healthy again soon. And noise in the background. Oh, yeah, I've got the live final table of the World Series. It's gone heads up. Ryan Reese, the Beast. One of my least favorite poker nicknames, but he's an amazing player. He's taking on Farber and murdering him now. It's all but done. I'm a big poker guy, so I will leave that on as I do this. Anyway, two more things to bring up. The next episode after the Tech Roundtable will be a great voice talent who is has his background in radio production, I think more on the commercial side. Anyway, Brian Cooney, who has been requested multiple times, the voice of many a radio station, including one of the voices of DC 101, but you hear him all over television, promo voice on, I think, Nat Geo Discovery, some of those channels. I'll have to check in with him. Anyway, that episode's coming. And then my good pal Joe Cipriano, one of the kings of the promo voiceover world, he's released a book, Living on Air, really fun. He was kind enough to give me a copy. I've checked out some of it. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it's cool because it's got links throughout the ebook where you can click as you move along through his story and watch, listen to audio and stuff he's posted on YouTube and whatnot. Actually, I went ahead and paused there. I just looked up. Looks like the World Series of Poker is going to come to a conclusion. Ryan Reese, the beast, has flopped top pair. He's got Farber all in. Farber has an open-ended straight draw. So he's not dead. So anyway, I'll give you the update on this, assuming this finishes out before this intro's over. What did I end with? Cipriano. Joe has a book out. I'll be giving away a copy on my website. And we'll do that next week sometime. I'm going to check in with Sip, figure out how we're going to do it. And then I'm going to bring Sip on the podcast finally. We'll be mostly talking about his book, but obviously anyone I talk to, we go in depth on their career. And he's done plenty of interviews, so... Oh, wow. Farber is staying alive. He just hit his open-ended straight. So Reese will not win yet. Okay. I think I've said enough here in the intro, haven't I? Let's get on with the interview. Alan Peck, one of the fastest rising stars in the voiceover world right now. He's the voice of Ellen, the signature promo voice of the Ellen Show. CNBC Prime, another one of his major gigs. He does tons of commercial work. You hear him all the time, whether you know it or not. We'll hear some of his demo work now, and then the interview with Alan Peck.
Next, Ellen, Amy Poehler, comedian and cool mom. Plus, Ellie Goulding, and yes, Ellen's Cat Week continues.
High on the most wanted list, they could be hiding anywhere. The season premiere of American Creed, The Fugitives, CNBC at night is CNBC Prime. One Direction, This Is Us, in 3D, directed by Morgan Spurlock, featuring One Direction's new song, Best Song Ever.
95.5 The Bay. Don't touch your radio. You don't know where it's been. Maybe near some chicken? You know what that does. Ooh.
Everything the way you like it, all within reach. That's the wonder of Samsung.
And today, I get to bring on my good pal, the one, the only, the Alan, the Peck. Hi, Alan.
Hey, I'm named after my dad, so really there's two of us.
I know. So, Alan, the Peck, the second.
What's going on, man?
It's really cool. You and I have been friends now a long time. I was actually thinking before, I think you're technically the second person I met in Texas, and I've been here.
Really?
8 years or so now.
And you stayed?
Yeah.
Oh.
I did. even still, I decided to stay. But no, you've been, obviously we've been good friends now a long time. And, I was going to have you on this podcast, I would say a year ago or so, but some major changes happened for you. And so we decided to wait, or I wanted to wait just to kind of let you sink into this whole new life. Well, not new life, but these big things that happened to you.
Oh, it's a total new life. My life now from 12 months ago, there is no way that you could have told me this is what it would be like and I would have believed you. I'd be like, whatever, man.
So let's, before we get sort of to that point, let's do the background. I like to give everybody's background, but... You know, give me the bullets. You started out in media. In what capacity? At what age?
The first thing was I was, I think, 6 or 7 or 8 years old, and I was in a commercial that my dad got me in because he worked at the time. He worked for a cable company, and it was before all the major companies got in. So before you just got cable from Time Warner, AT&T, whatever. Like, it was when cable first started out. So you would literally go to Bob's Cable and get cable from Bob. Mm-hmm. So my dad worked for Bob. And they did their own local commercials, and it was for Johnny's Discount Auto Supply. And I think I got hit by a car. That was my role in the commercial. So that's the first thing I ever did. I guess to backtrack a little bit, so my dad... has been in radio for, like, man, I think 60, almost 60 years. Yeah, 60 years at this point.
Yeah, I was going to get into that in a little bit, but yeah, I mean, go ahead and explain, but I'll just say for the Dallas-Fort Worth market, I mean, legend. You know, it's the Peck name is a heritage name in this market.
Yeah, so I'm told. So all this happened before I was born, so I didn't really grow up around that. So, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, because that's kind of an interesting story. But I really got me interested in media and in film and video, and that's what I really wanted to do. So from that day forward, That's pretty much how I graduated all of my grades. That's how I got through elementary school. That's how I got through middle school. That's how I got through high school, was instead of writing term papers, from that point forward, I made little short films and I made little videos based on whatever the paper was supposed to be about. Because I was lazy and I didn't want to write and I didn't want to do the research for all these papers. In hindsight, it takes way more time to come up with a 3-minute film. So we're talking, you know, minimum like 24 hours of work to do that, as opposed to if I just would have sat down with a pen and paper, I could have knocked it out in 30 minutes. But that was a better outlet for me, and that's what I really wanted to do. So I started doing that, and then I convinced the principal in high school to let me and a buddy of mine do the morning announcements, and we did it just like it was bad. We did it just like Good Morning Vietnam. So we would you know pick up the. But we would pre-tape everything. So we would do everything the night before and do it like a radio show in my bedroom. And then the next morning, play the tape back for whatever the announcements were, for whatever was at lunch that day, whenever the swim team had practice, whatever band practice was, just all, you know, high school announcements. And then we ended up getting...
So you didn't have a lot of dates in high school.
No. No, I did not. Okay. No. No.
So let's jump a little bit here. You got into radio, though. At this point, it sounds basically on your own at a pretty young age. Your first job was how old?
Yeah. So my first job, it was an internship at Kiss FM here in Dallas.
For those not familiar with the market, again, massive station. I mean, it's the CHR station. It's been near the top for forever.
Yes, huge.
Huge station.
Yeah. I got an internship there. And the way I got my internship was, going back to my dad and his connections, I was able to call a woman that was his ex-morning partner, and she knew somebody at Kiss FM, and she got me an internship.
Peggy
there.
Something?
Yeah,
what was
Peggy
her name?
Sears.
Yeah, and I think I was actually at her. She was inducted into the Texas Hall of Fame, I think.
Yeah, she sure was.
And she was inducted when Dorsey was inducted, and I was at that ceremony.
Oh,
so.
Cool.
Small world.
She is amazing. Because with her, I was 19 years old at the time, and I was in community college. I got that contact there, and then I was able to get an internship there. The internship thing was kind of weird because, you know, I was in community college. I wasn't like in a university where you would get an accredited internship. So I had to convince a theater teacher at the community college here, hey, I've got a once-in-a-lifetime shot at this internship, but it requires college credit. You know, can you just give me like an extra grade for this? And that would be considered a college credit. And she agreed to it. And then that's how I got my internship.
To just advance a little bit, you get into radio. Did you start on the air? You know,
no.
Okay. So how did you really start when you get the first real job?
So the internship was like literally I was handing out, you're free labor. So you become part of the promo team. But you don't get paid. I'm trying to remember because voiceover and radio both happened at pretty much the exact same time. It was when I was working at the mortgage company, and this guy next to me listened to the radio all day, like really loud. And I would hear the commercials play on the radio all day, and I was like, well, wait a minute, those aren't the radio personalities doing those spots. Those are other people. And I bet those other people are getting paid. Well, how do they get paid? Then I just did a little bit more research and I realized, well, you know, an ad agency goes to a talent agency. A talent agency auditions their talent and then somebody gets the job. So I opened up the Yellow Pages and I found every talent agency in town and made a fake tape in my bedroom. I was still living at home with my parents with the same technology and technique that I did my high school announcements in, but I made fake commercials and I shopped it to every agency in town, thinking no one would ever call me back. And there was only one that did call me back. And I've been with that agent for 16 years now.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, and at the time, I mean, you're with Kim Dawson, who is, I mean, you could probably put two or three Dallas agents in the same sentence, but I think Kim Dawson would be the top. So at the time, was Kim Dawson as big and Hugh, you know, as successful as they are now?
Yeah.
Okay. What was it that made, because let's be honest, your tape probably sounded like crap. So what made them call you? You know, what do you think got you in there?
So I delivered everything by hand at the, and granted, this was really, like, at the time they didn't even have an email address. They didn't have email. And it's not like it was that long ago, but they were really slow to really catch up to the rest of the world in technology.
Yeah.
So I delivered everything by hand. And with that agency, that's the one I really wanted to be in, but I knew I didn't have a chance getting in at all. I went up there with my tape and delivered it to the receptionist. And she was like, hey, you know, we don't take unsolicited submissions. I go, oh, no, somebody asked for this. I've just completely lied out of my face. And she goes, really? Mm-hmm. Who? And I said,
Kim.
And I looked down, and there was a list there of names of people that were out to lunch. And Jan was out to lunch at that very moment. So I zoned in on Jan's name, and I said, oh, I talked to Jan, and she wanted to hear this. And she said, oh, okay, Jan. It's like, yeah, is she here? I want to say hi to her. No, she's out to lunch. Okay, well, you know, thanks anyway. Give this to Jan. She asked for it, and I'll see you later.
And so Jan called you?
I didn't meet Jan for, like, probably 10 years. Jan worked in the on-camera department. She had nothing to do with voiceover. But it at least got past the receptionist because I dropped Jan's name.
Nice.
And then they called me in for an audition, so I had to read in front of people for the first time ever in my entire life, and I guess it was up to snuff. And then they sent me an audition like a week later, and the audition was, again, this was before, you know, people were, you know, sending off MP3s for...
Sure.
For their files. So this audition was a phone number I had to call and leave a message on an answering machine with me reading the script.
Mm-hmm.
And I called and I did that and I booked it. I booked my very first audition.
Nice.
And then I went to go record it. I was like, oh, I get to go to a recording studio. This is awesome. And then it's in this really seedy office building in a really bad part of town, and I go to meet the guy, and he's like, did you do the voiceover? Like, oh, what is happening? And then he leads me into this closet with, like, bed sheets over the wall to treat for sound and, you know, like this Mr. Microphone thing. Like, it literally had an orange pop filter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, go. And then that was my first job. It's like... Man, so far, everything that I've ever dreamed of that I thought was so amazing, like, none of it is even close to reality.
Not quite, not living up to the dream yet.
No, nothing. But still, it was really cool. And we finished it, and I heard the recording, and I was like, wow, I don't sound that great, but I did it, and you're now going to pay me monies, and I can do this for a while.
Yeah.
And then... So that at the same time, I got a job at a local radio station here in Dallas. My dad, again, he knew the owner. And then the way I got my job there on the air, I ended up doing nights there. And I got the job the same way. You've seen Office Space?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
of course.
You know Milton? And they just fix the glitch. They just stop paying him, thinking he'll just stop showing up to work. But he keeps showing up. Well, they tried to do this to the night guy, and they just stopped paying him. But he kept showing up for 3 months. And then finally, he's like, forget this, man. I quit. I'm out of here. And I was standing there when he left, and somebody had to go on the air. So the owner's son was like, you, go on the air. Here's your shot. Now. I was like, okay. And it was a format.
You, Adam, get on the air. It's Alan, sir. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care who you are. Just we got to get somebody on the air now. And so that's how I got on the air. I was just there. This time span was about 3 years. 3 years I spent in between being an intern, a board op, doing other things within the industry, but nothing that I wanted to yet. It took me 3 years to be standing in a room for somebody to quit and me have that opportunity.
For some reason, all I'm really thinking about right now is your parents at home going, man, is this kid going to shape up? Is he going to get out of here anytime soon?
My mom was not a fan.
What the hell's he doing?
My mom was not. Like, she's cool now. Now she's kind of, she's a little proud.
Oh, well, yeah. She's seen your house and your family and everything's coming together.
Right. But at the time, no. And I mean, now that I've got three kids, I totally get it.
Nice. Well, let's shift this into more on the voiceover side of the world. Obviously, we could probably talk radio stories forever. You know, I'll bullet point. Alan had a successful career via multiple radio stations in town. We might dive back into a few stories as we move through here, but eventually you get to one of the most heritage radio stations in Dallas, KSCS. That's where I was. Of course, at the time that I met you, you were at a sister station, the Twister. But anyway, eventually you're doing afternoons at KSCS, but your voiceover career is flourishing. And I guess before we get to the point at which you leave radio, how was it managing your voiceover career and being on the radio every day? You know, what were some of the issues you would come up against, or what are some of the benefits of doing it that way?
You know, the only time that it was an issue was when, you know, I got lucky enough to do some sessions for networks, for like CBS and the CW mm-hmm. and NBC. They do all those ISDN and they read the picture. So the sessions are live just as if it was airing on TV right then and there. So that's how they do them.
But do they do them in the afternoon often? Is that what you're saying?
It's all over the map. You get like a 5-minute warning sometimes. And, you know, you'll get a call from your agent at noon. Hey, CBS needs you for Mike and Molly at 12:05. Can you do it? And mm-hmm. if you say yes, then you're the guy. And if you say no, then you may never be the guy ever again and never work for CBS for the rest of your life.
Tell me a story real quick before we go into maybe the positive. But was there a big opportunity that you had to actually miss because of your day job?
No, I never had a major opportunity miss. I think I've only had to miss because of radio like one or two jobs that we couldn't work out, and it wasn't anything mm-hmm. major. It was just like a one off.
Just so people are aware, you know, the type of work you're doing. I mean, you were on the air in major capacities for a long time here, but as far as like promo work, this type of work you were talking about. You did, was it Good Morning America?
The Today Show.
The Today Show. Voice of that for a period of time. You did the CW. You did CBS. All of this type of work, this ongoing work, was happening while you were on the air.
Yeah, while I was doing afternoons at KSCS, or I was doing afternoons at the sister station.
Right. And you also were booking pretty major commercial gigs. And as I said, we'll go back in time a little bit in a minute. But How easy is it? I mean, the fact that you came into the radio stage, like you didn't have to be here from like 9 to 5, like, or you know,
no,
10
I've always been really lucky and had the most amazing PDs in the world, and all of them understood and got it that, you know, radio is amazing and it's great, and I wouldn't trade anything mm-hmm. for the world, but it can only get you so far. And they all understood that the future, at least for me, was always going to be voiceover. And that's really what I always wanted to do. And they were very accommodating to that, as long as it didn't interfere with my duties. I mean, I couldn't do an ISDN session between the hours of 3 to 7, right? I mm-hmm. mean, that's not cool. But I did a lot of things that I could do on my own, or auditions while I was on the air all the time. And mm-hmm. as long as it didn't get in the way of my on-air performance, no harm, no foul. They were totally cool with it. So it was just never an issue. And as far as the imaging, because I was also the imaging guy for both stations, at KSCS after you left. And as long as I just had my stuff done, I could do it at home. I could do it at a coffee shop. I could do it anywhere. As long as it got done, they didn't care. So I was able to create my own schedule as long as it didn't fall between 3 and 7.
And all that stuff was working out, for quite a while, but I think, okay, well, at a certain point you ended up leaving radio to go full time in the voiceover world. How long before that had you been contemplating going full time on your own and leaving radio?
It was September of 2011, because I left radio in what, end of 2012? Yeah, it was last year. So it was in September 2011 when our company got bought. Mm-hmm. And the CEO came in and he told us that if you didn't like the way I run my company, you need to go start your own. And then the next thing he said was, I don't care what anybody says, no two markets are different. There's no difference between Dallas and Nashville. There's no difference between New York and Chicago. All radio markets are the same. So when I heard those words, it's not that I agreed or disagreed with what he was saying. I just knew that I was no longer as valuable of an asset that day than I was the day mm-hmm. before.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had to figure something out.
So you started then really, because you know, you and I have known each other a long time, and you had certain waves where you had bursts of work where you were like, man, this is awesome. It's like hitting the lottery. You know, I could get out of here. But then, you know, it goes into lulls, and there's times where the work dries up a bit.
Right.
So anyway, at that point, you start actually planning it, though. What in your head did you decide was like, all right, if this or this happens, I'm gone? Or how did you know, what was your litmus test? How did you know for sure this is when you would go?
I didn't have any other option. That was my only option, was to really commit myself to voiceover, because that's the only area I could grow, or I continue to stay in radio and I continue to shrink. Those were my only two options. That's all I had. I didn't have a college education.
And so I guess what I'm actually driving at is then, what specifically did you have to have happen to make you say, okay, bam? You know, was it literally a number? Was it a financial thing? Like, I need to be earning guaranteed income of X, Y, or you know, or was it opportunities need to arise? What was the thing that was going to get you out the door?
Yeah, so it gradually started to grow, like right after that happened. And I put some new things in motion, and I made some career changes within the voiceover world, and you know, just really started to hustle more and just really commit myself 100% to that, but still keep showing up to the radio station every day because that's what I was contractually obligated to do.
If you had not been under contract, would you have left earlier?
I couldn't, because we were pregnant with our third child. And so we couldn't get insurance if I left early, because that's a pre-existing condition. So I had to keep my job for the insurance to have a baby. And it was our third kid. So I couldn't leave until November anyway. So November rolls around, and I get a call to audition for Ellen. And mm-hmm. I got the call while I was on the air and said, hey, we need this back in 10 minutes. I said, okay. You know, do this all the time, no problem. So I did it, and I sent it off, and then my agent called me back and said, hey, that was okay, but, you know, why don't you give it another pass and just, you know, keep this new direction in mind of what they were asking for. Like, okay, cool. So I sent it off, and then I didn't think twice about it, because those auditions come all the time. I've gotten really close to a lot of really big things for a lot of years and never gotten any of them. So... Mm-hmm. I just didn't. You just don't think about it. You don't attach right. yourself to the result. It's simply just, wow, it's cool that I even get to, you know, say these words that somebody wants me to say.
But yeah, with those auditions, you send and you archive and you put them out of your mind.
I'm done. I'm completely done. You can't think about it, because you won't get anything done. It's like if you're an author, and every time after you write a paragraph, you go back and reread that paragraph and you edit and edit. So fun, you'll never get a book written. And it's the same with a voiceover. If you do that with your voiceover career, you'll never advance, because all you're going to be doing is thinking about what you just did as opposed to what you should be doing next.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, an audition for Ellen. And then like 2 days later, I get an email from my agent saying, hey, I've got some good news. And that was it. And I was like, okay. But I didn't know of what. I mean, I had auditioned for probably a dozen things since then. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. So then she sends another email back and says, hey, hold off on the good news. I'm like, what does that mean? What is happening? Like, wait a minute. And then a couple hours later, I get a phone call, and she's telling me all about the deal for Ellen. And about 10 minutes into it, finally, I'm like, hey, this is great. And I think I'm excited, but what are you telling me here? And she said, you've got the job. And I said, this is happening, right? Like, this is not hold off on it. Like, this is happening. She said, yes. And then I just lost it. Like, it was embarrassing.
Did you weep like a child?
Oh, my. It was bad. Because I got the call. It was before I had to go on the air. And I got the call while I was standing in the front yard with my wife and our three kids, one of which being our newborn son. He was only 3 weeks old at the time. And I was really having a hard time with going to work every day, knowing that I wasn't a valuable asset. And to me, you know, I wasn't being...
To the work, not your family.
Yeah. To the work, right. You know, I was just, they were just keeping me because I didn't know why. They didn't really need me anymore. But I kept doing it, and I wasn't doing anything with my life. I was just following the status quo. I wasn't doing anything to advance anything in that world. And it's like, man, is this what I'm going to teach my kids? Am I going to teach my kids, you know, just keep doing whatever's working for you, and you know, that's all you need to do with your life, and everything's going to be fine. Don't ever really try to go out on a limb and follow your dreams. Don't zig when everybody else zags. Don't do something that everybody says is stupid, and you just play it safe all the time. I was really wrestling with that hard, but I had three mouths to feed, so what else was I going to do? And then I got that call, and then I realized, okay, 15 years in the making, this is your shot. And that's when I knew I could leave radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could put my money where my mouth is and actually teach my children, if you follow your heart and your dreams and you work harder than anybody else at it and you put your all into it, you will succeed. 100% success rate. It's going to be a different level of success to whoever you talk to as far as, you know, monetarily and whatever your goals are, but you will succeed if you have that mentality. And man, that was a big moment, not just professionally, but, you know, personally.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, obviously you have already told you congrats many times. You've since then, though, I mean, it's been a whirlwind for you, right? It's just
been blowing up
since then.
It's been nuts. So that happened in November of last year.
And that's actually when I wanted to bring you on the podcast finally. You know, I've been telling you for a long time, hey, man, got to get you on the show for sure. You're all over the place and this and that. You're like, yeah, yeah. Oh, but this is happening, so you're going to need to give me some time. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because what if they let you go in 2 weeks and then it won't really matter? Then you're the guy.
The new voice of Ellen. Oh, not anymore. Oh, damn.
Right. Yeah, so that happened in November. I turned my notice in a couple of weeks after that because I was going to see if, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. And then finally I was like, you know what, man, if you're going to do it, you need to do it now. And, you know, there's the universe is telling you it's time. So it was time. And so my last day was New Year's Eve of last year, day one.
Oh, was that your last day?
Yeah. And then day one was, you know, January 2nd. And then I got a call for, I was unemployed as of that day. I mean, I had Ellen every night.
Uh-huh.
But that day,
Who doesn't?
Right. I was unemployed that day. And then I've literally worked every day since then. And it's strictly voiceover every single day.
So I want to get a little more into the, the detailed aspects of the job now, you know, some specifics for voiceover pros out there. But tell us a little bit about that job for those that are curious how that works, being the promo voice of a show like Ellen, a daily show. But I already know some of it, but tell us a bit how that's structured, what you have to do and what you have to be ready for to take on a task or a job like that.
It is a machine. It is amazing what they do every day to produce what they produce and the quality they produce at. My part of it, it's very small. Like it takes up 15 minutes of my day. Like it's nothing. For them, like literally there is one guy in charge of watching the show while it's happening. So it happened, they record the show at 4 p.m. every day. So there's a guy in the room watching the show while it's happening at 4 p.m. He's taking notes while the show is happening. Producers of Ellen are talking to him saying, hey, make sure that gets in the promo. Hey, you know, make sure you look at this. At the other time, he's also logging things that are happening. And what logging is when he's taking notes of, let's say there's an American flag in the shot. And he looks at the time code and says, all right, at 20 minutes, 24 seconds and 23 frames, there's an American flag. Let me write that down. So three years later for the July 4th promo, oh, we need footage of an American flag. Oh, well, I can revert back to that episode 3 years ago that had an American flag in that shot. So he's taking notes of everything.
They're creating their database, right?
Yeah.
So that, or, you know, when George Clooney, when they do all that crap with George Clooney, when they're screwing with him, when he eventually comes on, they know all the episodes that they screwed with him.
Right.
They can go, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's one guy that does that. And he writes the promo. And then he gives that promo to the video editors and says, okay, go find all this footage, go. And they put together a promo, and then they do a scratch track to it with the script that he wrote. And then they turn around, and then they call me, and then we record it and get my part done, and then they ship it out an hour later. All of this takes place in about 5 hours' time. It is amazing.
So a little bit, I'm just, you know, can you get more detailed on what you have to do? You know, you're on call, so to speak.
Yeah, so I don't know when they're going to be ready, because they don't know when they're going to be ready. It's ready whenever it's ready. They just know they have to have this thing shipped out to all the affiliates by this time every day. So I'm on call every night, and pretty much, you know, they're like, hey, we're ready to go in 5 minutes. And it happens. Mm-hmm. So they're West Coast. I'm Central Time Zone. I'm in Dallas. And it happens any time between 11 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. Sometime between that window, I know I'm going to have to work for 15 minutes. And
when they brought you on to the job, I mean, you auditioned. I'm sure they didn't give up too much of the details.
I had no idea.
They had to obviously make sure, you know, hey, man, guess what? This is awesome. You know, it's good money, but it's a great exposure. All the stuff. Oh, but by the way, you're now our employee from 11 at night until 1:30 in the morning. Can you do it?
Absolutely.
Every day, right?
That didn't cross my mind as a roadblock in any way, shape, or form, because that was my ticket out. That was my next step for me. And
now this is Sunday through Thursday. Is that correct?
No, it's Monday through Friday.
Oh, it is Monday through Friday.
Okay. Yeah.
So has that, obviously it's a great opportunity for you. It's been huge. It's led to other things, but has it ever worn on you? Have you ever had any negative impact from it whatsoever?
I mean, you know, there's challenges that I didn't see coming. Like, you know, last night while I was waiting, I did doze off for like 5 minutes, and I woke up, oh my God, what time is it? And like freaking out, just like you would if you thought you slept in for work. Problem is, this is the gig of a lifetime. So then you really feel horrible about yourself. But that's only happened like maybe a handful of times. So, I mean, sometimes it is hard to stay up, but you know, it's okay. And then it's also hard to go back to sleep, because when we do the promos, I'm a pretty animated guy anyway, but man, it's like drinking 1,000 Red Bulls and just saying go.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, it's time to go to bed now. It's really hard to wind down.
I'm sorry, a couple things I'm curious about in regards to this, just because I know our time is going to be slim, so I want to move us along too, so we can get to all sorts of other things. I think about jobs like this where it is such, you know, an opportunity and you don't want to do anything to jeopardize it. But what happened? Okay, first of all, vacations. Second of all, let's start there, actually.
Okay.
I know that she's off kind of like a regular primetime show, and that she has, what, the summer off, basically?
Yeah. So in the summer, it's not an every night gig, though. In the summer, we'll do, bulk packages at a time. So on some days in the summer, we'll do like 10 episodes and work on those. And really, those, they just have to revise them to say, instead of saying on the Valentine's episode, it's just on the next episode. And instead of saying on the next all new Ellen, we just say on the next Ellen. So we're just revising certain lines. So, and then there's a period of about maybe 3 weeks to a month or so where you're not working on the show at all, except for maybe a random thing in the middle of the day that they forgot about or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as vacation goes, while the show is happening, for me, I don't take a vacation. I mean, we go places, but thanks to modern technology, you can work from anywhere. We went to San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and via Source Connect, I did an Ellen session in the rental car in the parking lot at the airport, all real time.
Okay, well, let me ask you one more thing about this, and then I want to get into the technical stuff, and you brought up a big one. What happens if you get sick? I mean, they need this voice every day, and you can't just say, oh, I lost my voice today. You know, what do they do in that case? And are you ever worried that, you know, what if they go find another guy to sub for you and they like him better, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so that also happened in San Francisco while we were there, and I got really sick, and I got this nasty chest cold thing. But you'll be surprised at what you can fake in 20-second bursts. You really can. And
even if you've got a nasty head cold, you can really pull it out of you and they're not the wiser.
Yeah, because you know there's certain tones of your voice that are coming from different parts of your body. So Mm-hmm. You know, my natural voice is kind of nasal. I mean, a lot of it comes from my nose. So when my nose is stopped up, then I just talk from my chest more. So now I'm talking strictly from my chest. Now I'm talking back from my nose. It's very subtle difference, so you can't really hear it.
Well, that's great, man. I hope everybody checks it out. I think if people, you have a lot of range. I don't know if people know, you know, some people might not know who you are yet, and hopefully they're listening to your demos and they'll see you, hear your range. But your Alan Reeds are very fun, very good. It's really cool. And so transition now, you picked up another pretty major gig. You are the voice of CNBC Prime.
Yeah. Yeah. They rebranded all of their primetime programming at night and called it CNBC Prime. And I was lucky enough to be chosen to be that guy.
And that's a totally, that's not Ellen.
That's
a different Alan.
Yeah. So that, and you know, it's reads that I'd never really done before too. So, you know, and I work with like a dozen different producers over there. They've got a huge team. And so, you know, I've got 12 different people sometimes getting me to be 12 different people. And it was really hard at first to be like, oh man, you know, what is this guy going to want? Like, I hope I can do whatever read they're going to throw at me that I've never done before today. Oh my gosh. And then, but you know, they're really cool people. And at the end of the day, you're helping them get a job done too. So they're on your side. They're on your team. So they'll help you get to wherever they need you to get.
About a job like that, you know, for people that are, you know, at a point where they're looking to break into that side of the business, or maybe they've tried or whatever, but you say it's kind of a read you've never done. Obviously, you auditioned for it, but why do they select you to do something you're not really known for or you haven't really done much of?
So it was weird. They actually didn't. So I started working with CNBC from a production company they had outsourced to work on what's called a sizzle reel. What a sizzle reel is something a network puts together to shop around to advertisers. So, you know, it's not for the general public. It's just for advertisers.
Yeah.
So I got hired to voice that. And then I got an audition to voice for the voice of the network. And I auditioned for it, and they didn't choose me. They used somebody else. I was like, oh, well, I guess that's gone. You know, whatever. And then like a week later, they call me to work on some little project for them. And then they call me the next day to work on another project. And then the next day they call me like three or four times. And the next day after that, it just snowballed into this thing. And then I guess it got to a point for them like, well, wait a minute. I guess we are going to use this guy, but it's costing us a lot of money.
Right.
To just like hire him piecemeal. So I guess since we're going to use him, we should just make him the guy. So that's how it happened. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
At least that was my perspective. I don't know. I have no idea what it was like on their end. But I just know in the beginning, I didn't get it. It wasn't me. And they just.
Yeah.
I don't know if the other guy just they couldn't get a hold of him. And he just didn't show up. And I was standing there. I don't know. But so that was. I don't know how I got that gig, but I did. And the voices they have me use for the promo are drastically different than the voice that I used for the sizzle reel that I was hired to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I guess they heard something that I didn't know existed, and they used me. And that's not the first time that's happened. That happened with CBS, too. The first go-round, they hired me to do some comedies, and then they auditioned me to work on a drama called Medium. And I never done drama work before. And so they asked me to, you know, audition, and I'm like, Medium on CBS, you know, trying to get real breath. It was awful. It was horrible. And so the head of promos was listening to this audition, and he goes, Alan, hey, man, chill out. Like, you've got a good voice. Just use your voice, and you'll be okay. And I'm like, okay, sir, that's fine. So then I just use my normal voice after that, but I was just like a little mean with it, I guess. And he goes, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And then that was it. And then I was the voice of the show till they canceled it. So I guess they just hear, they did hear something that I didn't know existed.
I have 15 questions now in my head, which often happens with these interviews.
Okay.
But this is something big I wanted to bring up and make, you know, I want to put a big stamp on this. And I think you're really leading to this point. And you've told me this. You've helped me immensely. I hope people know that. I was going to, you know, harp on that. But the one thing I pull away from you is be yourself. And you hear pros say that, but it's hard to do it. But it seems like these are all lessons to tell you, you know, be yourself. And that's something you preach. And how important is that for a voice talent?
It's all you have. Because if, see, you are your best asset. And at the same time, you're also your worst enemy. And really, if you just get out of your own way, the sky is the limit. So it all just boils down to confidence. And it boils down to, you know, when are you finally going to decide this is what you're going to do with your, and I'm not just talking about voiceover, just life in general. You decide, you know what, you know, I'm Ryan Dreen. This is what I want to be good at. So now I'm going to be good at that. And then that conversation is over. There's nothing else to talk about other than getting good at whatever you do. And so eventually you gain confidence. Hey, man, it turns out I am pretty good at what I do because I want to be so good at it. And I'm going to be good at this because there's no other option. And eventually you drink your own Kool-Aid and, you know, fake it till you make it. And eventually you make it, and then you have that confidence, and then you find out you're not that bad. You know, you're actually pretty good. And you also have no other competition by being yourself because there's no one else. There's not another Ryan Dreen out there.
And I like what you're saying. It's definitely true. But to be very specific in regards to, you know, voice acting, you might see an audition for something and you're like, well, they want this kind of read. You know, that's not really me, but I'm going to do my version of that. And it's sort of scary to just stop doing that and to just doing what you do and not being what you think they want.
Right. So that's where it gets kind of complicated. So, yes, you need to be you. You know, you need to be true to yourself and be 100% authentically you. But you still have to learn how things are done. Like you can't, if you're going to audition for a trailer, there is still one way trailers are read, and that there is one way to read a trailer, right? There's one method you watch TV and you go to the movies, and there's a reason that every guy to layman's ears sounds the same because there is one way to read a trailer. That's what the industry buys. That being said, then you need to find out, okay, well, how can I fit into that picture? What am I going to sound like by reading it the way that it's done? But don't try to reinvent things. Don't try to, oh, well, I'm going to reinvent how trailers are made. Like you're going to fail miserably. And, but that doesn't mean that you're trying to be something that you're not. It doesn't mean you're trying to give them something that they want. You're just, how can I explain it? What can I compare it to? It'd be like, I always try to compare it to like general contractors because I learn a lot from plumbers and electricians and, you know, just everyday blue collar workers that are the salt of the earth. If I hired somebody to come build a house for me and he doesn't show up with any tools and he's just like, we're not going to make this out of wood or metal at all. I'm just going to make something up now and build a house. Like, I'm not going to use
right.
that
I've
guy.
I've got ivory. I make houses in
right,
ivory.
I make houses out of ivory. We're like, man, no, listen, I like your designs, and I like you for the houses that you build, but you build a house with wood. You build a house with steel. You don't build a house out of ivory, so I'm not going to use you. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I also think something you've talked about to me a lot, and I've heard other coaches say, for example, that, you know, if you're auditioning for something, you know, don't, you know, be you first. Yeah, obviously there is a trailer read, and if it's a, you know, a comedy promo, you're going to do it a kind of a certain way, but,
right.
you know, don't try and sound like the guy you think they want.
No,
you
know, no. And you know,
they'll
that's
hire
just...
Alan Peck when they want Alan Peck, and then you win-win.
Right, because, I mean, at the end of the day, they either want Alan Peck or they don't. And it's up to me to give them the best Alan Peck I can. If I don't give them Alan Peck and I give them, you know, Alan Peck.
Like if you tried to sound like Joe Cipriano, who's amazing.
Yeah, well, they have. But Joe Cipriano exists. They can get.
Exactly.
And Joe Cipriano and Alan Peck cost the same amount of money. So why would they choose somebody trying to sound like somebody?
Right.
You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, but they're, there is no other Alan Peck. So if they want me, it's up to me to deliver me.
And don't be scared to deliver that, you know, right? I mean, again, this is all stuff you've told me, but don't be afraid to be you. And if they don't hire you, at least you're comfortable knowing you did what you do.
Yeah, if they don't hire you, they weren't looking for you in the first place. But they didn't know that until you did the audition, and neither did you. And really, that doesn't matter. Well, I mean, what matters is you have the opportunity to showcase your work and actually, you know, use the skills that you've tried to develop.